I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football. I like football season, all the things that go with it.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo back here with Sam Monson. It's part two of the PFF 50 breakdown. We're not wearing the same thing as the last episode.
Okay.
Don't even call attention to it. Nobody will notice.
No, nobody. Certainly not now.
Part two of the PFF 50, the best players in the NFL heading into 2021. Before we get into it, here's what we did. On our last episode, we broke down the top 25, broke down a little bit of the process when we're putting these rankings together, and we talked to Bobby Wagner, who is number eight on the PFF 50. Do you want to just, before we get into it, let's remind everyone. Oh, you had an email you wanted to discuss. Do you want to get into that?
Yeah, we'll do a listener of the week.
All right, let's have a listener of the week here.
So remember,
kick off the show.
Email us at nflpodcast@pff.com. Send us interesting thoughts, interesting stories. Send us whatever the hell you like. They're fun. They're fun emails to read.
Like, I like our youth hockey stories, to be honest.
Yes. Our listeners are awesome. We get some cool emails. So this one comes from Lawrence Osborne, who says, I played hockey with Jason Kelce. This is how the email just begins, by the way. Just straight in there. I like it.
Name dropping, but worthwhile.
Yeah, yeah. Jason was tall and athletic. He was not big, and in no way would somebody think that this kid will play offensive line in the NFL. This, by the way, there's a lot of typos in this email. Like, yeah, and they like change the substance of the email, so you've got to be on your toes.
Work your way through.
Like, for example, that says offensive line in the NHL, which I don't think is what he was shooting for. But he was the biggest kid on ice with a reckless abandonment and would always put his body on the line. On this particular play, Jason got the puck on a breakaway. No player was between him and the goalie. Jason was very fast, and no other player was going to catch up. As he got closer to the net, most players would slow down to stick handle and get into a shooting position. Jason instead increased his speed from the top of the circles. Now, the biggest and one of the fastest players was moving at top speed. The goalie is visibly shaking. Okay, probably not shaking, but he knew he was in for trouble. And while crashing down on the net, Jason loses control of the puck. He looks down to find it, and by the time he looks up again, without the puck, he's moments away from staking into the goalie. Jason tries to turn out of the way, loses an edge, and falls, but was able to avoid the goalie and the net and slams into the boards to the left of the net. The goalie, who was lucky not to get destroyed by Jason and is now instinctually watching Jason go flying by him, still continues to look at him as Jason slams into the boards. The puck, which at this point is still slowly rolling towards the net, ends up sliding very slowly into the goal. Jason looks up to see the puck in the net and starts to celebrate. Ed Kelce, Jason's dad, who still to this day is the most intimidating person I can think of, yells in a booming voice that echoes across the rink, "What, did you hit it in with your purse?" What a random and outstanding story.
The visual is incredible.
Yeah, just giant human careering out of control, slamming his way.
Completely out of control.
Losing the puck, slamming himself into the boards. And the goalie is so entranced by watching this that he misses the fact the puck is still slowly skidding its way into the goal.
I mean, everybody's got their own go-to move on a breakaway.
Yeah.
And that's Jason's.
Launch yourself at the wall instead.
It's great because obviously Jason Kelce is a big human for, human standards now. But for NFL standards, he's like a little tiny, undersized center who looks like a linebacker and is so good out in space and still really athletic.
You make Jason Kelce look small.
Yeah, he's tiny.
He's about the same weight as you, and you have like however many inches in height over.
Don't reveal my weight on air.
I didn't. I said about.
Who was our listener of the week then?
Lawrence Osborne. That was his name, right? Yes.
Congrats to Lawrence. We'll send out some perhaps some free subscriptions to our listeners of the week. So send us some emails, nflpodcast@pff.com. Maybe you'll become the listener of the week for the show.
Mm. So far, we haven't had things physically sent to us except your baseball card there.
And the coffee stoppers.
Oh, look, you can see it in the shot right there.
The baseball card and the coffee stoppers.
Oh, and the and the coffee stoppers. They weren't a decorative item. They were a functional item.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're open to more decorative items for the table here. So, not asking, just saying, open.
Just open. To
open
it.
For sponsorships.
Not asking,
too.
Just begging.
You know, like if you work for Nespresso or something like that.
Nespresso would be good.
We both have Nespresso.
We're the Emporium.
Machines.
Look, we've switched our allegiance from the giant multinational conglomerate that is Starbucks. We're no longer partaking in.
I finished my coffee from the first show, so I have no Emporium today.
Unfortunately, I still have an Emporium cup, which may or may not be the same cup.
Yeah,
who knows?
Inside baseball.
It's the beauty of television. You're never going to know.
You're never going to know.
It could be tomorrow's. Hey, can't even see it. Look, it's down here. See? Yeah.
There it is. Go Emporium. Yeah. All right, so today we're talking 26 through 50 on the PFF 50, the best players in the NFL. But we'll also talk about the guys who just missed the list, the people that everybody's angry about. And, of course, we'll talk about the guys that might be on the list next year. Because, you know, we can look ahead. Who are the youngsters or the guys that will break out in 2021? So, the top 25, it's all over at pff.com, the entire 50. We talked about the top 25 on Monday. Let's start by resetting. No, we're not going to name all the top 25.
Go listen to the previous podcast if you want to see who the first 25 guys were. By the way, one more thing to drop in just in terms of housekeeping. Our charity drive reached its goal.
We have successfully
done. So at some point, once you've been to get the rest of your crap from your house, Sam is going to be dressing up as Minor League Steve, complete with idiot facial hair on one of these podcasts. But the critical point is that means we now need a next thing. Like, what is the next charity drive going to be? So the first one was the Fro Show, which was magnificent. Steve Palazzolo's afro live on the show. This one will be Minor League.
What else would people...
Sam and Steve.
Donate money to charity to see.
Yes. So the next one, we need help from you guys thinking, what should the thing be that we will do to raise money for? I did think that Rick Drummond has turned into one of those freak chili growing lunatics that has like all kinds of strains and weird things and like a whole yard full of this crap.
Yeah, my boss Rick on the project management team.
He was telling me that he did, when he was away, he went on vacation and he set up a camera system so that he could see his plants while he was gone. And it did occur to him apparently that might be a step too far. You know?
Well, no, I mean,
you've gone into weird territory.
I'm the project manager on PFF Ultimate behind the scenes here. Yeah. Rick is the senior vice president of football operations. That's his official
title.
And we have a weekly meeting that's Ultimate / Pepper update.
Yeah.
Because him and a few of the other IT folks around here, they grow a lot of peppers. And we spend about 10 minutes of the meeting, you know, going around and I have nothing to talk about, but they talk about their pepper growing and what's happening there. And, you know, sunlight, you know, requirements and all these different things. So yeah, Rick's into it.
Well, somebody sent me like a chart that was, you know, one of those Scoville charts where it's like hottest to, or least hot to hottest. And just, I got lost down a rabbit hole of like the insane chilies at the high end, you know, the ones that are named weird things.
Yeah.
So there was one that was called like, it was one that was like Dragon's Breath or something, which, you know, that sounds pretty bad. But there was another one that was like the Apocalypse Scorpion Hot Pepper or something.
Is that the worst? Like,
It was either the worst or like one of the top three, right?
Either way, worse than Dragon's Breath.
It just sounds like one that you need to try. You know what I mean? Apocalypse Scorpion.
I don't really want to try any of these.
But anyway, here's my point, is that Rick came up with the idea that we should eat one of his insane peppers live on the show.
A whole one? Maybe I'll try a bite.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the... Depends how much money comes in.
We'll just have peppers all over the blood.
Depends how much money comes in, right?
Yeah, we'll see.
But the point is, during my trip down the rabbit hole, as you know, Alice in Wonderland, I was reading this thing where it was like, you need to have gloves on to handle the seeds that we will send you when you're planting them.
Yeah, I don't want to eat that at all.
Well, this is the thing, right?
I'm over that.
It feels to me like at the point where you need protection for your hands, not like the internals when you're going to consume this thing, at the point where you need to be wearing gloves just to handle the seeds of the thing that isn't even a chili plant yet, that feels like too far.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think I'm over that. So.
But that being said.
If you have better ideas, hit us up.
That being said, if people are willing to throw a lot of money at this, I think I could eat one of those on the air. I mean, look, I'm not going to.
We're also open to other ideas.
Yes, definitely. I'm not going to put any guarantees as to the quality of my performance in the show from that point onwards. But I think I could do it on, like, I'll eat
Does
one
that
of those
do
things.
Like long-term damage to the taste buds? How long before you get your
no,
taste buds
not
back?
Long-term, but I think
not
like
long,
for the,
but like,
for the duration of the show, you're not going to be making a lot of sense.
What about for days? Do you get day-long? Like, when can you taste again?
Rick was saying he tried one that was, I think, a hot sauce that had, like, capsaicin extract in it, like the actual chemical, the heat chemical. And he thought he'd given himself chemical burn of the tongue for a while. But he's fine now.
We're open to other ideas here on the PFF NFL podcast.
I'm not,
so hit us up, nflpodcast@pff.com.
I'm not eating anything that's had like chemical extract put in it. But if you give me like something that is allegedly the hottest chili on earth, I'll take a bite out of the thing if people have raised money for it.
I mean, I'll watch you, I guess.
You as a coward will not.
Yes.
How can you be that size and be afraid of a chili?
My tongue's not like stronger than anyone else's at 6'10". It's not like
no,
I've got...
No, but there's like a certain degree of like, you know... respect that you have to have. Like, you can't be like
chili is a respecter of no man.
If you're in, you can't be afraid of a mouse at that size. This is part of the deal. It's like
I'm not afraid of mice.
You're too large to have a silly phobia over nothing.
Who wants mice around?
Nobody wants them around, but there's a difference between wanting them
Can
around
we get
and
into
being
the,
like there's a mouse.
The
oh dear, somebody go take care of it for me.
All right, so I'm not going to reset the top 25. Go listen
no.
to the other yeah. episode, but 26 through 50. Let's start with 26. Dalvin Cook of the Minnesota Vikings. Oh, remind everybody, how did a running back make this list? How are we doing this?
Position, all positions, with the exception of special teams that don't really count, are created equal.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're all created equal, but we took snap counts into account. So,
yeah.
You know, Justin Tucker's only got like 110 snaps in his season.
Not enough.
That's not enough.
Not
Fullback's
enough.
Only got 15 snaps. So, not enough. Dalvin Cook, number 26, running back. It's also, we're looking forward. We're looking forward to 2021. This isn't looking backwards.
Yes. And it's because of that, there's no guaranteed way of doing this. Just because you were great last year, recency bias doesn't mean you're necessarily going to be the greatest thing next year.
This is where it becomes very difficult to separate. This guy's 26, this guy's 30, so bear with us here. Dalvin Cook, 26. Nick Bosa, edge from the San Francisco 49ers, is 27. Ryan Ramczyk, offensive tackle for the Saints, is 28. Marlon Humphrey, 29, Baltimore Ravens corner, and then 30 is Christian McCaffrey, running back from the Carolina Panthers. Two running backs in this group of five players here as we round out the top 50.
Yeah, this apparently is where running backs become acceptable to praise.
Look, Derrick Henry was the top running back off the board, by the way.
Dalvin Cook being number two, I think, would raise some eyebrows. He is number two, right? That's the second running
back. He's the second running back, yes.
Dalvin Cook being two, I think, would raise some eyebrows. But Dalvin Cook... as much as we talk about, hey, generally speaking, running backs are a product of their environment, and a great environment will make any running back look really good. Dalvin Cook might have had the toughest environment of any of these guys. Like, his ability to consistently outperform what the blocking has been achieving in Minnesota, and even with the credit of, hey, look, the Vikings' offensive line has been bad, but it's been a better run blocking unit than it has been a pass blocking unit. So it hasn't been as catastrophic a line in front of him as you might think. But Dalvin Cook's ability to outperform the blocking over the last couple of years has been pretty crazy. He keeps rattling off these runs that he has no business making. And, you know, is a useful member in other areas as well. He isn't just a ball carrier.
When we talk about when we were doing our podcast last year, don't forget we previewed every game and then reviewed every game. And when we were in the middle of the season, I remember trying to come to the conclusion, okay, when do running backs matter? I think if you get Dalvin Cook-type performance, Derrick Henry-type performance, there are certain games where they are much more the driver than, you know, most games, right? There's a lot of games where the running back just takes, you know, 20 carries and they're not a massive factor in the game. But like Dalvin was at week 8 or 9 against Green Bay where they upset the Packers and he just takes over. And it included screen passes and his ability to take it to the house at any given time, Dalvin Cook is up there with anybody else in the league. It's, you know, Saquon Barkley-esque and, you know, some of these guys that can just rattle off big plays. So, yeah, the actual production has been good, but to your point, the Vikings' run blocking has been hit or miss. They've put him in tough situations at times, but when he's in the open field, he has legit game-breaking speed. I've always loved Dalvin Cook. He's always had this, dating back to Florida State, where he could take over a game from the running back position. And again, the reason why running backs aren't as valuable as other positions, it's tough to do this every week. But there are certain games where it happens, and Dalvin certainly has that ability.
Yeah, and I think stylistically, because of the way the NFL has gone, I think the type of running back that you want is that the guy with burst and straight line speed that can take a crease and turn it into like a massive play immediately just because of the speed. Dalvin Cook's definitely got it. It's why I think Travis Etienne was my favorite running back in this year's draft class, because he's the guy that has that. If you give him a crease, he can get through that and be gone. It's why, you know, those 49ers running backs, those are the guys they look for, the guy that can get through the gap and then take it 50 yards in a heartbeat. I think those are the guys that overall in most systems will make the biggest impact.
Let's talk about McCaffrey, who, as we mentioned, comes in at number 30 on the list, coming off an injury-plagued season, only played in three games last season, right? Weeks 1, 2, and 9. So McCaffrey was banged up, but the previous year, I mean, we've seen him being the best. He's been the best. Him and Alvin Kamara have been the best receiving running backs. McCaffrey is not as good of a pure runner as some of these other guys on the list, but the best all-around running back in the league. It's certainly a debate between McCaffrey and Kamara.
Yeah, McCaffrey, I think, is just good at everything. The biggest problem he has right now is that his time missed, injured, has highlighted the sort of the realities of the position, which is you're not necessarily the thing controlling your production. And when McCaffrey wasn't in the lineup, Carolina's run game didn't suffer. In fact, it actually got a little bit better. So now they're getting back one of the best players in the NFL who's got this monster contract, and they need to figure out how to get him back into the lineup and not get worse while they do it. And it's not that, like, it's a problem with him. The fact that they do have worse numbers with McCaffrey there than without him means that you're doing something when he's in the lineup that is not beneficial to the overall health of the offense, right? You're trying to feed him too much, or you're trying to get him the ball in a way that isn't necessarily helping versus what you could have been doing otherwise. So it's not a problem that McCaffrey has to work through. It's just an issue for Carolina to figure out how you take advantage of having a guy that is objectively fantastic at running the ball, at catching out of the backfield, is one of the best players. But it sort of highlights how much running back is dependent on everything else around them.
When he was healthy in 2019, he had 7 different games with at least 10 targets. Finished the year, McCaffrey, with 135 targets. That's the point, I think. The game I always highlight, week 16 against the Indianapolis Colts, caught all 15 of his targets for only 119 yards, 7.9 per reception. Receiving grade was great because he was taking 2-yard checkdowns, turning them into 8 or 9 yards consistently throughout that game. But the Panthers couldn't score. I think McCaffrey will be more valuable this year if he's healthy, as long as it's the complementary piece. If there's only a couple games where it's high target volume for McCaffrey and it is matchup driven, as long as, you know, the Panthers are trying to get the ball into the hands of their very good group of receivers that they have with DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson, with Terrace Marshall coming in, David Moore. So McCaffrey has that ability, right? When you see a matchup, just like Dalvin Cook can take over a game because of his big play ability, McCaffrey, if you just have a mismatch against the linebacker in a given game, attack it, use it, and that's, you know, what he brings to the table. I mean, we've talked for a while, like, if he was just a slot receiver, he's still one of the better players in the NFL. He happens to be able to run the ball pretty well as well.
But it also shows how much better defenses have gotten at that problem, right? The number of times they're actually able to find that mismatch, like the giant mismatch problem that just causes these huge plays, it's not that often.
Not often.
Like, teams have gotten so much better at neutralizing that particular threat from a running back that can catch passes.
Let's stick on the running back theme here, because Nick Chubb comes in at 37. Alvin Kamara comes in at 39. I could see, you know, you could debate all these, of course. Kamara, you could make the argument that he should be higher. Mm-hmm. Nick Chubb, you could make the argument that he would be up in that Derrick Henry range as guys that are 4 yards after contact,
yeah,
per rush runners. That's what Nick Chubb and Derrick Henry do, but neither of those guys does as much in the pass game as some of the others on this list.
Yeah, if Nick Chubb was any kind of factor in the pass game, he would be like really high on this list. He is arguably the best ball carrier in the NFL. Derrick Henry is obviously the other guy. And look, the thing separating the two, like, Titans fans get upset when you put Nick Chubb in the same kind of bracket as Derrick Henry, because Henry, you know, 2,000 yards, all that. But it's just Derrick Henry is the one guy in that backfield. Nick Chubb is dealing with a backfield that has Kareem Hunt there as well. Like, he splits his time. And to be fair, like, the fact that he isn't a a factor in the pass game, kind of takes some opportunities away from him that he would have.
That does help Chubb a little bit from a freshness standpoint.
Right. But Chubb has the best broken tackle rate in the NFL since he's been in the NFL. He's averaging, as you said, like 4 yards per carry after contact while he's been in the NFL. He is a phenomenal running back that just needs to get just a little bit better as a receiving threat or a better blocker to be put in that kind of category.
Yeah, for his career, Chubb has averaged over 4 yards after contact per rush. For his career, in his three-year career, granted, he's never run the ball more than 298 times. Last year it was 221, but we're talking over 5 yards per carry, over 4 yards after contact. So Chubb, one of the better pure runners in the league. And then Kamara, we'll see. You know, I'm not going to diminish his value. I think it helped having, obviously, Drew Brees as the quarterback. Drew Brees, who's going to get you the ball in space. Kamara is one of those guys that they do use as a mismatch weapon. When you do see him lined up out wide against the linebacker, he's one of the few running backs that you trust running double moves and running passes down the field, running routes down the field. And then last year when Brees couldn't throw the ball down the field, how many plays is it a dump off where he's turning third and 13 into a first down when he shouldn't? You know, one of the most difficult running backs to tackle in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, Kamara is... So he doesn't have the rushing workload that some of these other running backs have, but he offsets that by, you know, if you include the playoffs, he's at 100 targets every single season of his career, which for a running back is a pretty freaking big number. And there's a couple of regular seasons that he's had 100 targets as well. So Kamara is the opposite of Chubb in terms of he's absolutely a factor in the pass game, and like that's the biggest strength that he brings to the table. And by the way, the times where you do give him the ball from the backfield, he's a really good ball carrier as well.
All right, let's go to Nick Bosa, who we mentioned. We talked through a bunch of the edge defenders on the last show and how Nick Bosa could easily be much higher. We've only seen that 1 year of incredible production. He was banged up last year, hardly played. So Bosa could be one of these guys. He's at 27 right now, who could be the top end of the list.
Yeah, we talked about him a little bit on the last show. Like, it's incredible that we've only seen rookie Nick Bosa. And rookie Nick Bosa is good enough to rank as one of the best edge rushers in the NFL. He broke the all-time pressure record for a rookie that we've seen dating back to 2006. And if you think about the rookie pass rushers that have come into the league since then, we've seen a lot of good ones. Like, that's a pretty extensive list of very good pass rushers to have eclipsed. And actually, you know, the guy that had the record before was Aldon Smith. So it was a record that had stood for a long time. And the more amazing thing is that once he'd done that, like, he was still smoking by the time he got to the playoffs. And when most rookies are falling off, Bosa was getting better. So last year we got robbed of seeing what he would do in year two. But year one was so special. You know, he was the best pass rushing prospect we'd seen come along in terms of PFF college performance. Now Chase Young, I think, is that guy. But, you know, Bosa's right up there in terms of being the best prospect we've ever seen, in terms of being the best rookie performance we've ever seen. There are reasons to be scared of, you know, one season, incredible production, regression candidate. But there's a lot of things sort of backing him up in terms of saying he's still going to be amazing.
I believe that wraps us up for edge defenders on this list, right? Bosa at 27. Chase Young does not make the list.
Correct.
We'll talk about him later because I was fighting for him. I think he'll be on this list next year. But he'll be in that who's going to be on the list next year discussion. Ryan Ramczyk, offensive tackle for the New Orleans Saints, coming in at 28. And might as well talk about Teron Armstead, his running mate at left tackle for the Saints at 43. A whole bunch of Saints on the back half of this top 50. I think showing just how good that roster really is. So Ramczyk at 28, Teron Armstead at 43. I keep referring to them as the top tackle tandem in the NFL. It has to be those two guys, right? Two guys in the top 50.
Yeah, I think. I mean, yeah, I guess you could make an argument for the 49ers with Trent Williams just because he's that good. And then Mike McGlinchey, who's a very good run blocker, not so much as a pass blocker. But yeah, New Orleans, I think, is the clear number one team there.
Ramczyk has been incredibly consistent. However, he is actually coming off his lowest grade in year four of his career. It went 81, 82, 90.9, and then 79 last year. So dropped off a touch last year. But we're talking PFF, premium stats, all a part of your PFF elite package. Go to the Ryan Ramczyk page. It's green or blue everywhere. That's good.
Yeah.
Good to elite everywhere from pass blocking, run blocking. Ramczyk can really do it all.
Right. And I think a couple of those, like it dropped below 80 only because of the playoffs, which weren't a couple of good games for him. But it kind of tells you everything, right? That like the lowest, the worst performance we've seen from Ramczyk is still very good.
Now, the difference with Ramczyk and Teron Armstead, Ramczyk has played over 1,100 snaps each in all of his 4 years. Here's Armstead's last 4 years in snaps. 667, 742, 990, 994. So clearly, if Ramczyk's playing 1,100 snaps each of those years, Armstead's missed between 2 and 500 snaps each of the last 4 seasons.
Yeah. He's never played 1,000 snaps in a season.
Including
the postseason.
But when he's out there, he is so good. He is the classic. I mean, if you talk about upside and scouts getting it right, he came out of Arkansas Pine Bluff at 6'5", 304, ran a 4.71 40, drafted in the third round. I mean, this is a classic upside pick that hit. I just wish he could stay healthy.
That must be one of the longer college team names in existence. The Arkansas Pine Bluff Golden Lions.
That's right.
It's a lot of things to be throwing into a name. Yeah, look, if Armstead played every single snap the whole way, he would be seen as good a left tackle as anybody in the NFL. He has multiple seasons under his belt of a 90-plus PFF grade, which is as good as it gets. He's got three more in the 80s. He's never been below the mid-70s. He has been as good as it gets. He just misses time that some of these other guys don't. So it's another part of this, right? It's difficult to evaluate that. How much do you penalize him for the time he misses? And I think, obviously, we've penalized it enough, but like I think that's what takes him from being arguably a top 10 player in terms of just when he's on the field to ranking number 43.
So Ramczyk's 28, and we mentioned Armstead at 43. Let's go to 29. Marlon Humphrey of the Baltimore Ravens, a guy that can play outside corner that they've put as a slot corner quite a bit. He's got some Charles Tillman to him.
Yeah,
the way he's forcing fumbles.
Peanut punch master this past season.
Yeah, I mean, Marlon Humphrey is he's a unique player in that the Ravens have tapped into his skill set and not just made him an outside corner. Put a lot on his plate, you know, because of that role. But he's performed pretty well despite, you know, having more responsibilities, and he's become a big play defensive player for the Ravens.
Humphrey had 9 forced fumbles last year. No other corner had more than 4.
That is Peanut Tillman-esque.
Yeah, it really is. By the way, one of the corners that was second in the NFL with 4 was his teammate, Marcus Peters. So the Baltimore Ravens had a pair of cornerbacks that had 13 forced fumbles.
I always make fun of coaches or joke about coaches saying, we're going to emphasize turnovers. Mm. Like, we're just, okay. I mean, if it's that easy, you just turn the ball over, guys. But there is something to making a conscious decision to try to force fumbles, to knock it out, and maybe you miss a tackle.
Punch is a thing.
But like, where's that balance as a former, you know, defensive back, Sam? Where's that balance between I don't care if I miss this tackle or give up a few extra yards because I've got support, and the payout of if this ball hits the ground, we have a 50-50 shot of getting that turnover?
I think it's about picking your spots a lot of the time. Like, Charles Tillman was so good at it because he was able to like time it to the right time where you're coming in more or less in the same body position. You're not sacrificing like any shot of making the tackle. All you're doing is attempting with that first bit of contact for, instead of it being a wrap with this arm, we're actually going to punch in with this arm, try and hit the ball, and then grab hold of whatever we've latched onto at that point anyway. So I think Tillman was really good at like meshing the two and not having it be a sort of conscious choice of, well, I'm going to go for the forced fumble here, and if I fall off the tackle, it's okay because somebody else is coming anyway. He sort of combines the two into pretty much this is the same technique. All I'm doing is slightly adjusting the entry point with this arm. And Marlon Humphrey was doing a lot of that last year as well. I think there's a specific technique towards doing that. Now, it's one I think that you need to practice and like make a conscious choice that, all right, this is how I'm going to be doing this a lot of the time. I mean, I never did that. Like, the only time I ever forced a fumble was like, I don't know, there was like a conscious, oh, look, the ball's pretty exposed here, I'm going to go after it, as opposed to, I'm coming in to make this tackle anyway, let's try and peanut punch the ball and see if I can force some fumbles here.
Maybe you should have tried to force more fumbles. You would have been first team.
Maybe, yeah.
Instead
of
second team.
But evidently, like, there is a way of sort of practicing this and making it part of your natural process.
Don't forget, PFF is partnered with Symbol. That's S-I-M-B-U-L-L, the stock market for sports that allows you to trade sports teams like stocks and earn cash payouts when your teams win. Symbol has blended sports and the stock market to offer you a new way to invest in and profit off your favorite teams. MLB is in full swing for the rest of the summer, allowing you to earn daily cash payouts. And NFL free agency, there's still a few players out there that could move the needle, so be sure to invest wisely. Use promo code PFF. Deposit $10 at symbol.app/PFF to earn a free PFF annual subscription. It's promo code PFF with a $10 deposit at symbol.app/PFF to earn a free annual subscription. All right, we mentioned McCaffrey at 30, the second running back in this group here. The next chunk, do you want to reset? Dalvin Cook, 26. Nick Bosa, 27. Ryan Ramczyk, 28. Marlon Humphrey, 29. Christian McCaffrey, 30. The next five, Cameron Hayward, Pittsburgh Steelers at 31. Harrison Smith, Minnesota Vikings at 32. Eric Kendricks, also of the Minnesota Vikings at 33. Allen Robinson, wide receiver for the Bears at 34. And then Julio Jones at 35. What haters we are putting Julio at 35. Mm-hmm. Tennessee Titans, that is.
Yeah. I mean, on the other hand, the Falcons just got rid of him. Julio Jones is coming off a down year and an injured year. And the problem is he's now in that age bracket where every time something like that happens, you have to start sort of thinking, well, that's the beginning of the end, right? He's just, for every time now, anything happens to him, that's what you're going to be thinking, because he's 32 years old, and that's when players like that typically start to decline. So if Julio Jones had been coming off an injured season 3-4 years ago, you wouldn't bat an eyelid. You'd say, all right, that happens. Before that, we've got, what, 5-6 straight years of 90-plus PFF grading, being the best wide receiver in the NFL. Let's cut the guy some slack. Like, you're going to get injured sometimes. You're going to miss some time. That's just the way of the world. But because he's 32, you have to factor that into what he's going to be doing in the future and say, all right, is Julio Jones now going to get back to being as good as he was at his very, very best? And I think it's important to say, look, he was still really good last year when he did play. Like, his overall grade was 86. He was still one of the best receivers in the NFL, still averaged 2.6 yards per route run, but that's down from 3, which was his sort of baseline during that 5-6 year stretch of being the best receiver in the NFL. So, yeah, look, the Julio Jones thing could come back to bite us. I could easily see him being healthy this year, and then because A.J. Brown's now opposite him having an absolute monster year and looking like the best receiver in the NFL. But I don't think it's crazy to say, given age and injury history, it's time to pull him down the rankings a little bit.
Well, let's go through some of the other receivers here. So we mentioned Allen Robinson at 34, Julio at 35. Julio's teammate A.J. Brown, we put at 38. And then Michael Thomas, New Orleans Saints, 44. Stephon Diggs, 45, Buffalo Bills. Is that it for, yeah, that's it for receivers. If, you know, Diggs, I've heard people say Diggs is too low. There's fair arguments for all of these guys. We mentioned this on the other show.
Which is the problem, right?
Yes.
Like, you can make an argument for, like, the top 10 wide receivers in the NFL. There's guys not on this list that I think ranked second in the league last year. Like, wide receiver is an absolute
Justin Jefferson had
right,
just missed
an absolute murderer's row of elite players who any given year could be the number one guy on the list. So a huge amount of it is like longevity and sample size and how confident you are that things will be in a good position next year, because it's very quarterback driven as well, which explains Allen Robinson, for them to have that great year.
I could see any of these guys being in the top 10. Allen Robinson, and when you describe wide receivers, we talk all the time about how it's one of those positions where you can have your strengths accentuated, but all of these guys have so few weaknesses, which is why they're the best. I mean, yeah. Allen Robinson, if you just talked about his contested catch ability down the field, you'd say, okay, he's incredible, but he's also he's got great flexibility as a route runner. He knows how to get open. So Allen Robinson does it all. Julio, of course, has done it all. He's a guy that you want to put the ball in his hands. You also want to attack down the field with him. A.J. Brown has all of that ability too, just legit strength and speed to create after the catch and get behind the defense.
And look, all of these guys, with the exception of DeAndre Hopkins, have had really good quarterback play elevating them, you know, over the course of their careers, largely to the point where when somebody goes from a good quarterback to a less good quarterback, now it's like, well, how much is that going to hurt his production? How much is that going to harm what we see from this guy in the future? DeAndre Hopkins obviously fought through that disaster of a Texans situation for a while, then got Deshaun Watson, then had Kyler Murray. So things have gotten better for him. Allen Robinson has never had a good quarterback, ever. NFL, college with Christian Hackenberg, probably high school, given the stories and numbers out there. Allen Robinson may have never had a good player throwing him the football.
And now?
And yet.
Andy Dalton.
Well, and yet has always managed to rank in the top 10 and was a top 5 graded receiver last year. So, like, a lot of people would look at that and say, Allen Robinson has never been a better player than Julio Jones. On the other hand, he's never even had in the vicinity of the quarterback that Julio Jones has had throwing him the ball. Maybe this is the year that's different because Justin Fields was drafted in the first round. And while Matt Nagy is guaranteed Andy Dalton will be the starter week one, I don't anticipate that lasting very long. Justin Fields has A, the arm to get it anywhere on the field, B, the accuracy to put it actually on Allen Robinson as opposed to just vaguely in the vicinity that Robinson is running routes. So if Justin Fields comes in and continues this trend of like young quarterbacks hitting the ground running, he could be the first good quarterback that Allen Robinson has ever played with.
I think that's a little overrated.
Nope.
It's a little overrated. Because even the worst quarterbacks in the NFL are still going to get the ball to you more often than not. And sometimes, in the case of 2015 Blake Bortles, his ability to just, you know, YOLO it up and throw jump balls and all that stuff actually worked in Allen Robinson. So he gave him a opportunity to shine. So I agree, it's nice to have a better quarterback than a worse one, but I don't think it's not as drastic maybe as
Drew
Locke we make it out to be.
Destroyed Jerry Jeudy last year.
And there were games where Jeudy destroyed Drew Locke and didn't catch the ball.
Briefly.
A couple games.
But the point is that a bad quarterback can absolutely torpedo the production.
I think it depends, though.
If you're consistently getting open.
If you're a guy who wins at the catch point like Allen Robinson, if it makes him look good, too. You're catching all these off-target passes, you know, throwing a jump ball. You don't have to be a good quarterback to throw a jump ball.
The point is, though, that he does all that anyway if you gave him accurate on-target passes. Like,
no, I agree. I'm not saying it's not going to help. I'm just saying maybe it's a little
overrated. All it does
is
make him better. Like, we talk about Allen Robinson as this contested catch hero and this guy that makes – it's because he's had to be. Allen Robinson is a really good route runner who gets open as well. It's just that most of the time you don't see it because Trubisky is firing the ball at the turf or into the stands or to a safety. Like, if you just put the ball where Allen Robinson had actually run his route to, Allen Robinson's production goes up, and he doesn't have to make as many ridiculous circus catches.
I do expect his production to go up. Michael Thomas has been really productive with Drew Brees, but he was also productive with Teddy Bridgewater running the Saints there. And then Stephon Diggs became a high-volume receiver last year with the Bills. And, you know, his huge statistical season, Diggs, coincided, of course, with Josh Allen's breakout last year.
Yeah. Thomas, another guy coming off an injured year, and the question is, like, how much do you ding him for that? And he's a guy whose quarterback situation probably isn't going to be great next year with Taysom Hill, Jameis Winston, whatever version of that shows up. So, yeah, Michael Thomas, I think, was a tough one to figure out sort of how far down the list to drop. And then Diggs, it's the opposite. It's like Diggs was fantastic last year, but can you rank him above Julio Jones or, you know, some of these other receivers?
Yeah, let's just remember, any of these guys could be in the top 10 next year. Michael Thomas is a year removed from having 20 more first downs than any other receiver in the NFL.
Yep.
If you want to call him a possession guy or not, yes, he maintains possession for your football team, which is extremely valuable. Julio Jones, as you mentioned, the most valuable per route receiver, per snap receiver in the NFL since 2011 when he entered the league. So any of these guys could be great. AJ Brown has Julio Jones type skills. Yeah. And if he had a little bit more volume and, you know, less of a run heavy attack in Tennessee, we could be talking about him as a, you know, 100 catch, 1500 yard receiver annually. So the receivers are really deep. That's why there's a bunch in this 26 to 50 range. Let's circle back to Cam Hayward. But before we do, all these receivers are going to be key in fantasy. And if you like fantasy football, and if you like playing fantasy for money, you need to check out Underdog Fantasy. Underdog's got everything, including season-long and playoff best ball. You love my transitions. Best ball is a season-long game where you draft a team like you normally do, but that's it, Sam. You just set it and forget it. There's no in-season roster management. Underdog automatically selects your best performers each week, saving you loads of time. Go to Underdog Fantasy, deposit $10 using promo code PFF, and get a free PFF Edge annual subscription. That's it. Just $10. Promo code PFF. Draft now at Underdog Fantasy. So now we're going to circle back to Cameron Hayward at 31, Pittsburgh Steelers. There was a time, remember the Steelers, they were just churning out these big 5-tech, 3-4 defensive ends. And it took a while. They hit a little bit of a lull. But Cameron Hayward, Stephon Tuitt, when he's healthy, have gotten them back on track. But Hayward has just gotten better and better and truly become a guy that's in that conversation with Chris Jones for that next interior D lineman behind Aaron Donald.
Yeah, the best 4 seasons of his career have been the most recent 4. And they've been, you know, he's getting a bit like, remember Calais Campbell?
Yes.
Like when he turned 30 was when he became like an elite, really dominant player, and then continued that through the last few years. Cameron Hayward is the same thing. It's like as soon as he reaches that age where you start to worry about decline, that's when he started to play his absolute best. I think over the last 2 years, he's got the second highest grade behind only Aaron Donald, again, for the interior defensive lineman.
The difference with Hayward, though, is he's been a top 5, top 6 run defender
right
each of the last 2 years. Chris Jones has been a better pass rusher, and we're just
– yeah, I mean
– we would want to weigh pass rush a little bit more there.
Cameron Hayward has more defensive stops than any interior defensive lineman over the last couple of years, and he's behind only Aaron Donald. Like, so – I think there's a battle always waged in at that position to be the next best guy. Donald, forget it. He's off on his own. Who can be the next best guy? Is it Chris Jones? Is it Cameron Hayward? Or is Fletcher Cox for a period? Hayward, I think, has got a really good case. He's right up there with Jones.
We mentioned Harrison Smith at 32. He's the next safety off the board. John Johnson, another safety, is there at 41. And then Marcus Williams, another Saint, safety at 48. Trying to separate these guys when it came to free agency, yeah, from this ranking, there's a clump of safeties that are really good, right? That are you trust them in various roles in coverage.
Yep,
they could play the run, sure tacklers, don't make a ton of mistakes. I think those, just discussing that trio, Harrison Smith, John Johnson, and Marcus Williams, are all in that boat.
Absolutely, I'm going to make an executive decision. See if you like it. We've been in here for a while now, right?
Yeah,
it's freezing. What if we just go over there and tap up the heat?
Oh, you're cold? You're too cold?
Oh, I'm freezing. Freezing.
Yeah, you could go do that.
Freezing my balls off.
Yeah.
We go over there, just tap it up, right? Hit 70, and then see if anyone notices.
Okay.
See how long it lasts.
Do you want me to go?
No, I can go on my own. I mean, you just
no, but do you want me to take over for the show?
Not for the show. I mean, you just...
While you go, you vamp. I will...
It's going to take me a matter of seconds, I believe. I don't think it's that complicated.
This is my time to shine.
So, you know, you keep the people entertained...
That's what I mean.
And I will go and turn the heat up.
All right, so let's talk about those safeties. Harrison Smith, Marcus Williams is at 48, John Johnson at 41. Harrison Smith, I mean, there was a point in time where he was the best safety in the league. He was right up there near the top, versatile safety that the Vikings tap into, play those two high role, work downhill as a run defender. He could play center field. He could play too high. John Johnson going to the Browns. They got him because he's got 3 years of 80 plus grades in his 4 years in the NFL. The only other year he got hurt was 2019. So John Johnson has been incredibly consistent. He's another guy. They're all moving up this list. I'm just, you know, Mr. Positivity here. Everybody's moving up this list next year. You think your guy's too low? Don't worry. They're all going to be in the top 10 next year, Sam. You're walking in front of the shot. You should go around the shot next time.
I wouldn't worry about it.
I was just talking about how everybody's going to be moving up into the top 10 next year.
Everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. That's
going to
make
be a crowded,
quite a
crowded top 10.
Quite a crowded
it's
top 10.
It's kind of like where you have 100 guys rumored to go in the first round of the draft.
Yeah. So I think I've set the temperature.
You were over there for a while.
It's complicated. There's a lot of, like, it's a touch screen, which in and of itself, you know, drink is a problem. But then there's like, it's not clear if you've actually changed the temperature. So I've moved it up. It says set 2 now in the 70s. Doesn't actually appear to be doing anything yet, though.
There are some people in the organization here that are very comfortable at 67, 68, and they're going to frown upon this move.
Only if they notice. This is my theory that, look, it's freezing in here right now, and I suspect if you crank that up a couple of degrees, no one will notice.
If you really want to set a joke, set it to like 80 and see if anybody notices.
I think that people might notice that.
Yeah, just drown out.
But I don't think anyone's going to notice the difference between, you know, high 60s and the 70s. I don't. So if,
I mean, it's like... It's like splitting hairs on PFF grades.
Exactly.
What's the difference?
If that actually worked and the temperature does raise to the point where we're not dying of hypothermia, I don't think people are going to notice.
So it's a good group of safeties, Sam. Harrison Smith, John Johnson,
tell you what,
and Marcus Williams.
Tell you what else. We're saving the environment, right? Because it's freaking warm outside, so we're using up less energy to cool it down to
energy
this
efficient
Arctic temperature that it is right now. So by upping it, we're doing that thing that all the electric companies tell you. Like, just... tap your thermostat up a couple of degrees. They're usually talking about the winter, like, you know, dial it back so you're not killing the planet. we're in the height of summer and we're dialing it up a little bit so we're not killing the planet. I'm just hoping everybody out there. Yeah, it's hotter than this, though. That's the point.
Let's talk Eric Kendricks. We talk about linebackers and, you know, his, you know, zone-heavy scheme in Minnesota. Rangy middle of the field defender. Remember 2019 making a ton of plays on the ball. He's become one of the best coverage linebackers in the NFL.
Yeah, more pass breakups, I think, than anybody else over the last couple of years. Kendricks is one of those linebackers that changes the picture in the middle of the field. You know, the way Luke Kuechly always used to do. That
there were that.
Passes that you can hit against most linebackers that you couldn't with Luke Kuechly, he would shrink the window that you're dealing with and cause you problems. And remember, you know, a couple of years ago in the playoffs, the Vikings ultimately got blown out by the 49ers, but there was a while in that game where Jimmy Garoppolo was just intent on throwing the ball to Eric Kendricks. And it's not because, like, Jimmy Garoppolo is an idiot and doesn't know what he's looking at. It's because Eric Kendricks is at places that he isn't supposed to be in terms of where every other linebacker is. So Jimmy Garoppolo is making the right read, throwing the ball to the right guy, and it should get past the linebacker because it usually does. But Eric Kendricks is a guy that changes that dynamic, that adjusts the window you have to hit. And that, I think, makes him A, really good, and B, very valuable.
Let's get to the most underrated player on this entire list.
The most underrated player.
It's Bryce Callahan. He's at 36. So I'll do the reset one more time. 31, Cameron Hayward, Harrison Smith, Eric Kendricks, Allen Robinson, 34, Julio Jones, 35. We put Bryce Callahan at 36. Denver Broncos corner. Plays the slot. Played a little bit outside last year. He's 5'9", 188. Is he like our new Chris Harris? It's tough to uncover gems in today's NFL with, you know, PFF being so prevalent, to be honest. I mean, we do influence a lot of public perception now, far more than we did 8 or 10 years ago. And 8 or 10 years ago, you know, we would pound the table for various players. It's like, hey, this guy's really good. He's really good in our system. And Chris Harris was always one of those guys. And I think we helped, you know, elevate the narrative around Chris Harris's play. It's harder to do these days, but Bryce Callahan is one of those guys who has played in the slot. He has played for Vic Fangio now in Chicago and in Denver, and has played really well in that particular role.
Yeah, he has. The fact that he's 5'9", 188, and was able to play on the outside during the season, and not just that, but like thrown in there sort of relatively last minute in terms of, hey, look, we've got injuries, we need you to shift things and play outside because you're better than like the fifth ranked rookie we can drag up to do it. And he held up really well. Like a guy 5'9", 188 is going to struggle on the outside against this list of giant receivers we've just been talking through
right.
about, you know, 6'2", 220 pound guys that can run as fast as you are. It's a nightmare. And Bryce Callahan was able to do it and then, you know, move back to the slot when he could. His performance last year was pretty incredible. He missed a few games injured, but he allowed a passer rating of 46.9 when targeted. And this was in a year of record-setting offense, record-setting passer rating, etc. He didn't allow a catch longer than 19 yards all season.
Yeah,
there were
7.1 yards per reception.
Five of his last six games, the longest catch he gave up was 8 yards or fewer. Eight.
That's really impressive.
Right. Like, that's the average yards per attempt that some quarterbacks hit, let alone yards per completion. So yeah, like Callahan's performance was pretty crazy. And then you take all that stuff away and you're like, he's one of the best slot corners in the NFL just generally.
Yeah, so I think, you know, Fangio's scheme protects corners a touch. You know, I always bring that up where you if you have a zone heavy scheme, you can do a little bit more. But there is a specific, you always mention there's a specific skill set when you play in those systems. It's not better for everybody.
Yeah,
it's good for guys that are good for that system.
There's no protecting being 5 inches and 50 pounds smaller than a guy.
True.
Like, there's only so much the scheme can do there.
And Callahan's one of those guys where it's like, okay, let's continue to prove it. And here's how he's done it. In 2017, coverage grade of 77. 2018, it was up to 81.3. He missed 2019, and then last year, 86.7. When you start to see multiple years of success and then the kicker be in that different role last year, mm-hmm. the ability to just avoid big plays. Bryce Callahan just deserves a lot more credit. So good for him. Congrats to Bryce Callahan landing at 36th.
He's also given up 3 touchdowns in 5 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's really impressive. And, you know, he's listed among some of the top names. We, you know, there's still this element of, you know, the sample size is still relatively small. because he hasn't played over 800 snaps, 700 snaps in any of those seasons either. But he's up there right now because he's got 3 years of really good success the last 3 years we've seen him. So Bryce Callahan at 36. We talked about Nick Chubb a little bit. He's at 37. Talked about A.J. Brown, who's at 38. Alvin Kamara, mentioned him as well, at 39. Which brings us to number 40, Josh Allen, Buffalo Bills quarterback.
Why do you hate Josh Allen, Steve?
Did we underrate Josh Allen? This is a good spot for him. He's the fifth quarterback off the board. The sixth QB is going to be Dak Prescott at 50. So, do we get that right?
Well, this is all your decision. I signed the Josh Allen apology for him. I think he's a superstar. Why do you hate him?
I don't know if he'll be the 40th best player in the NFL next year. I mean, value-wise, he'll be higher than that.
You think he's too high? You think we have him too high on the list?
No, he's fine. He's fine. Do you think Josh Allen's the fifth best quarterback in the NFL? Do you completely buy in to he's there now? He's in Russell Wilson level category here?
So I think it depends. Like, the problem is, like, who knows how any of those, like, obviously we know roughly speaking who the top half dozen quarterbacks in the NFL are, but like, what is their relative performance next year going to be like compared with each other? Like, nobody saw Aaron Rodgers posting the best season of his career last season. You know, rolling into the year, we were kind of joking about this Rodgers revenge tour and, hey, what if drafting Jordan Love turns him into, like, the best Aaron Rodgers again?
So, yeah, we did see it.
And it not only did it do that, but it, like, exceeded the best Aaron Rodgers we've ever seen. But we were like, you know, it was a joke. It was like, hey, yeah, we might get a good season out of Aaron Rodgers, but nobody saw him getting back to being better than he's ever been before. So, like, that could happen to any of these guys. Like, what if Russell Wilson bounces back from a relatively crappy second half of the year and has a career performance over 17 games? Like, that would make Russell Wilson number one on the list, almost certainly. What if, like, Patrick Mahomes actually puts it all together? Like, you don't get the odd bad game. You don't get the relative high turnover. Like, he cuts down on the turnover-worthy plays. Injuries, stays healthy. And you finally get this, like, full realization of the ridiculous talent that Patrick Mahomes has. Again, he would be the number one by a mile. So, like, it's just difficult to know which ones of those guys are going to have the outstanding season versus just the sort of baseline very good year. I think Josh Allen could easily rank anywhere in that top five, but equally I could see a little bit of a step backwards from what was a massive leap from him last year.
PFF grades of 65 as a rookie, 64 yeah. in 2019, and then 90.3 in 2020. Here was one of the big differences. Big time throws, 17 as a rookie, then to 15. He's always had it in him, right? He's always had the big arm, the ability to make those big time throws. But last year at this time, we were talking about just how bad his deep ball was in 2019. Well, he went from 15 big time throws to 45 last year, including the four in the playoffs. So 41 in the regular season. I think the thing that would still hold him down potentially is the turnover worthy plays. If those big time throws drop a little bit, the turnover-worthy plays. Last year, he had 29, but only 11 interceptions, right? Only 11 actual interceptions. So turnover-worthy plays include bad fumbles. Yes, as a percentage, they've gone down drastically the last couple of years, and maybe that goes down again, but I think that level of interception or turnover luck will be tough to replicate. I expect a little bit of a regression from Josh Allen. There has to be, right?
I mean, I think the biggest difference was just he found the deep ball. Now, the question that I have is how much of that was coincidental with the arrival of Diggs and how much of it was an actual connection between the two of them? Because
I think it's both, though.
PFF passing grade went from 40 in 2019 on deep passes with a passer rating of 61, 9 big-time throws, to a grade of 93.6, a passer rating of 107, and 28 big-time throws.
It's an extreme difference. But
so he went from, like, one of the worst deep-throwing quarterbacks in the NFL to one of the best in an offseason.
We've talked about this before, right? Before we understood data a little bit better, I think it was easy to say, here's how this guy performed. Let's expect that same performance going forward. And then we became a little, you know, we learned a little bit more as far as, well, when you have extremes, they do tend to, you know, regress to the mean and the whole thing. And instead of saying, well, Josh Allen's just a bad deep ball thrower, he'll never get bad at it, we did say last year at this time, hey, that is one of the things that tends to reverse course. And it reversed in an extreme manner last year. So is it also fair to say that has to regress a little bit. Instead of saying, well, he's arrived, right? Again, it's, you know, he's there. He's the best deep ball thrower in the NFL. He's one of them. He's Mr. Big Time Throw now. That will tend to regress just a little bit as well. The thing I'm most impressed about with Josh Allen, though, short and intermediate area, decision making, accuracy, timing. I mean, so much better than what we saw at Wyoming and early in his career. So I think that baseline is going to be still strong. But if we're talking MVP Josh Allen versus slightly regressed Josh Allen, it's going to be that deep ball, and it's going to be those chunk plays and interception regression, I think, that might make things look a little bit worse last year than it was this year.
And that's what made him such a difficult quarterback to kind of peg, because like last year he was actually really good except the deep ball. Like he was one of the best graded quarterbacks in the league up to 20 yards. And then the second you asked him,
2019 he was, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. That's what I mean. Last year. And that's as soon as he had the deep ball to deal with, everything fell apart. He was the worst deep ball thrower in the NFL. So it's a very weird, specific problem that a quarterback has. Like, very rarely is a quarterback just entirely inept at one very specific thing that if you took that away, if you changed that, they're a great player. It almost never happens that way. So you're looking at Josh Allen that year, and you're like, I mean, okay, his overall performance isn't great, but if you literally just teach him how to hit a deep ball every now and again, like, Josh Allen becomes a very good quarterback. And not only did that happen in the space of an offseason, but he went from like one extreme to the other. He went from the worst in the NFL to one of the best. So even if you split the difference there and say, okay, next year he's not going to be the best, one of the best deep passers in the NFL, he'll be somewhere in the middle, like, he's still a very good quarterback because he was already grading extremely well at everything up to the deep ball.
All right, so Dak at 50, he's the next quarterback on the list. When we get into the just missed list, I think there's a healthy case for Lamar Jackson to be that next quarterback off the board. We took a lot of people's input on this, Sam, not just you and I.
Is this where we throw Bruce under the bus?
It's Bruce's fault.
Yeah.
Bruce put Dak over Lamar. I put Lamar. I'd still maybe take Lamar over Josh Allen at this point.
So, yeah, the position rankings that PFF has been chunking out for the past few weeks, ranking season, they were all kind of done before the 50.
So we believe in consistency.
So, yeah, to a large extent, we were locked in to the order of certain players within a position group, right? So, obviously, you can change is Quentin Nelson more or less valuable than Khalil Mack? Up for debate. Not locked
better.
In anywhere.
Yeah.
Or better, sorry. But Quentin Nelson was locked in as being a better player than Zach Martin and a better player than Joe Tooney, et cetera, by the rankings. So, Bruce, our quarterback guru, 11-year NFL veteran, the guy that does, you know, the quarterback grading at PFF, Bruce did the quarterback rankings. Now, to be fair, he asked for input, and both of us gave him input. So
here we are. It's not crazy to have Dak as QB6.
Bruce had Dak above Lamar Jackson. By the way, for the purposes of, or for full disclosure, Deshaun Watson ranked number 5 in the quarterback rankings and was essentially removed from the PFF 50 because of everything swirling around it right now. So look, a lot of very serious allegations, the fact that who the hell knows if he's going to be playing in Houston, all these kinds of things. It was just easier to put an asterisk next to Deshaun Watson and remove him from the list than to rank him as part of the 50 and act like none of this is going on and, you know, treat it like it's business as usual. So Deshaun Watson would have been on the list if all we were doing is talking football, but that isn't the way of the world, so he isn't.
So the reality is we have Allen as the 6th quarterback, Dak as the 7th.
Yeah.
Among guys that we assume will at least be playing football at some point next year, including Deshaun Watson. I don't think it's that crazy. I mean, Dak has really turned a corner, I think, over the last few years, gotten better and better. Liked the way he was trending last year, even in defeat and even, you know, in before the injury. So Dak, as a passer, I think we could certainly trust more than Lamar Jackson. It's always in this just missed list with a guy like Lamar, how much value that, you know, he adds from a run game perspective. And on top, and then knowing he's still a good passer, Lamar, but not a guy that's going to carry the team through the air. Dak was asking those same questions about Dak a couple of years ago. So Lamar might not be far off.
Yeah,
in that discussion.
And Dak has the benefit of, like, that situation looks like it's going to be very good around him again. Like, it's not, he's not going into a worse situation heading into 2021.
All right, let's round this thing out here. So we've got Josh Allen at 40. We mentioned John Johnson, who's 41, safety from the Browns. Grady Jarrett at 42. Another one of those just really good interior defensive linemen. Let's try to get through Grady Jarrett without talking about the top interior defensive lineman in the league.
Okay, because it's not him.
No, yeah. I mean, Grady's just good. I mean, by the way, he's been good since Clemson.
You know the way everybody loves, you know, on pace for statistics?
Yeah.
You know, like the first week two or three is where it's like, hey, player Y is
throw
on
for 190
pace.
Touchdowns.
Like yeah. And everyone loses their mind because it's a small sample size. And you're like, yeah, I know. It's just, it's funny. Dak Prescott played in 5 games. You know how many yards he was on pace for?
7,000.
And this, by the way, is not adjusting for the fact that he didn't make it through half of the fifth one.
True.
Right? So
the ankle sprain.
Right. With the cramp. So I'm going to hope it. I'm not adjusting for the fact that you can probably double that number, right? He'd thrown for 166 yards in that game. Let's double it and say that's 300. I'm not even doing that.
It was about 7,500.
He was on pace for 5,939 yards after 4.5 games.
Record's 5,500.
So yeah, if you adjust it for that game, it's even more. Like his pace was ridiculous.
Peyton Manning broke the record on a lateral.
Yeah?
Remember that?
You're going to hold that against him for the duration of his life?
Yeah. So backwards bubble screen. Lateral. Should have been rushing yards for Eric Decker, whoever caught it.
So the 22 dropbacks he had in that game were
I got news for you,
less
Sam.
Than half any other game.
I got news for you, Sam.
Yeah?
That record's going to get broken very, very soon.
Is it?
17-game schedule, Sam.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Do you care?
Well, factored up even more. What's he going to get then?
It's going to be old hat. Oh, 5,500 yards? Everybody throws for that. 17-game schedule.
Yeah, I'm just saying that he was like that.
Oh,
at the
50
moment,
touchdowns, the three guys a year
is still the number that everybody recognizes as being like, hey, this is the thing that a quarterback does.
Back in the 16-game schedule era, asterisk. Stick to 16 games, NFL. Come
right.
on.
So 16 games, if you adjust that game, 6,470 yards.
Yeah, this is going to be a 6,000-yard passer soon. Like that year when you talk about Mahomes all coming together. When Mahomes goes scorched earth, when he gets offended like Brady does and Rodgers does, Mahomes is going to throw for – I used to think it was going to be 6,000 yards. It's going to be like 6,800 yards or something.
Yes. So there you go. Adjusting Dak's pace last year, adjusted for a 17-game season this year, was on pace for 6,875 yards.
There you go.
That's a big number.
Yeah. It's just – it's all made-up stuff.
I mean, it's getting into – like, what are the college numbers with those ridiculous spread quarterbacks?
Well, they play fewer games, but yeah, they average 450 a game and stuff, yeah. Anyway, Dak's at 50. So we're going through the list again. Grady Jarrett at 42. Just, again, an excellent pass rusher, run defender, you know, undersized, has played nose, has played three technique. Grady Jarrett continues to get better. We talked about Teron Armstead at 43, the tackle from the Saints. Michael Thomas at 44. Stephon Diggs is 45 for the Bills. The only couple guys we haven't talked about is Ronnie Stanley at 46, the offensive tackle for the Ravens. James Bradbury makes the list, number 47 for the New York Giants. Finally get him out of the NFC South and see what Bradbury could do. And then Marcus Williams is 48, talked about him with the Saints. And then Lavonte David, 49, one of the other three guys we haven't discussed. The linebacker for the Bucs, the better linebacker on the Bucs.
Better linebacker.
Lavonte David.
The good one.
The perennially underrated. That underrated Lavonte David just continues to ball out in his old age.
Yeah.
And the Bucs brought him back on a 2-year deal.
I mean, the
deal.
Bucs, so, you know, we sample sizes can work for and against you. But sometimes I think there is something interesting to looking at individual single game case studies of what players can do and what happens when they get put in certain situations. We talked on the last show about how Travis Kelce was so dominant, the teams were just trying to find their best cover guy, putting him on him and hoping that would do it. And, you know, it didn't. Denzel Ward was left face first in the turf as Travis Kelce was scoring a touchdown in the playoffs. Travis Kelce was basically uncoverable. The one guy that actually did a pretty good job of covering him was Lavonte David in the Super Bowl. Lavonte David had a pair of pass breakups on targets intended for Travis Kelce. Now, okay, there's a little bit of help in terms of Patrick Mahomes is running for his freaking life the entire game, so that didn't exactly hurt. But, like, Lavonte David was able to cover Travis Kelce as well as number one cornerbacks were. Better than number one cornerbacks were.
Yeah, so Lavonte David's still really good. Ronnie Stanley at 46, he's right up there, right behind David Bakhtiari, I would say, as far as that next great. pass protecting left tackle, we always use the caveat, yeah, you're blocking for Lamar Jackson. Teams have to be a little bit careful. You've got a heavy play action attack. But even when on non-play action dropbacks, Ronnie Stanley only gave up a handful of pressures in 2019. I mean, he's been good in all pass blocking situations. He's not as good of a run blocker as some of the other guys on this list. And then we talked about James Bradbury having a 79.8 grade last year, a career high. So yeah, there's this, you know, can he maintain it? But I do think there were a lot of times during his career, Bradbury at Carolina, where you said, okay, this guy is really good, but he is stuck with trying to cover Michael Thomas and Mike Evans and Julio Jones and Ridley and all the great receivers in the NFC South. And I think we saw a little bit more of what Bradbury is capable of last year in the Giants scheme.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, you know, I was talking before that season that I thought, hey, if you just get him out of that division, give him, you know, put him somewhere else, he's going to look a lot better, because just the list of receivers that he was having to cover in the AFC, the NFC South, was a nightmare. But if you look at the guys he was covering last year with the Giants, like he didn't have a hell of a lot easier time of it. He went up against some really legit wide receivers last year. So in terms of individual personnel matchups, his job didn't get that much easier, but he did have that career year in a different scheme. And I think we saw the potential that James Bradbury has always had. I mean, he made plays in his rookie season that were sort of 10-year veteran type of savvy moves. So I think he's always had the ability to play at this level, but we finally saw what a whole year of it put together looks like.
All right, let's get to our snubs list. It's not easy putting together a top 50. It's not. You know, if one guy's 48 and another guy's 52, it's tough separating them. So who are the guys who just missed the list? And then we'll get into who's going to be on the list next year. There'll be some crossover here because everybody's going to be on the list next year. Everybody's going to be in the top 10.
Everybody, yeah. Well, Justin Jefferson was the number 2 graded receiver in the NFL last year as a rookie, and he didn't make the list.
So we just need to see it again? Need to prove it out again?
Right. I mean, look, we've
so he'll be on the list next year, we think.
Almost certainly. I mean, we've been bouncing around this idea of, hey, look, the wide receiver is the toughest position in the NFL to make this list, right? Michael Thomas has 4 or 5 years of extremely elite play, and one injury blighted season drops to 44 and almost misses the list, right? Justin Jefferson, okay, the only information we have on Jefferson says he's an elite top receiver, but it's 1 year. And who knows if he'll back that up next year or regress to the point where he falls outside of that top 5, 6, 7 receivers that make the list. So I'm just, look, receiver is a really tough spot to make the list in. It's an absolutely loaded position. So you're going to need more than 1 year to make it.
DeForest Buckner's a guy with the Indianapolis Colts. If you just look at 2-year grades over the last couple of years, all the other interior defensive linemen that we mentioned have graded just a little bit better than him.
Yeah.
From Grady Jarrett to Cameron Hayward, of course, Aaron Donald, Chris Jones. So Buckner just misses it because it's just, he's probably the 5th or 6th best interior defensive lineman, and we just ran out of places for him. I think Minkah Fitzpatrick, Steelers safety, similar.
Mm-hmm.
We ran out of spots, but he was close. There was points where we debated who's at 49, 50, and Minkah was in that discussion.
I mean, we say this about the PFF 101 as well, but the 50 even more so. Like, you are talking about insanely rare air to be on this list, right? There's 3,000 players in the NFL. We're talking about the top 50. That everybody on this list is fantastic. Everybody that was almost on this list is fantastic. You are splitting hairs. You are debating between outstanding players at various different positions. So by not making this list, it's not disrespect. It's not an indictment of that player. It's just, there's 50 guys. Like, at some point, there's a line to be drawn. And, you know, we saw you as slightly worse than guys like Dak Prescott or, you know, Ronnie Stanley, who we're talking about as being arguably the best pass blocker in the NFL. Like, it's just tough. It's a difficult spot to be.
All right. Two other cornerbacks in the AFC East. Stephon Gilmore. I think they dropped off for different reasons. They're not there for different reasons. Stephon Gilmore, who I think we said was certainly the best cornerback, him and Jalen Ramsey, we were debating last year at this time, best cornerback in the NFL heading into the season. Gilmore just came off of 3 exceptional years and just dropped off last year.
Yep.
So the drop-off was just too strong. I know I want to take 2-year sample. I want to take multi-year sample sizes.
But
he's getting a little bit older.
Yeah, he's got the same issue that Julio Jones has, right? Which he's now at that age where you expect drop-offs. So the first sign of it, it's like, you can't ignore it.
And if he bounces back and he's a top 10 player next year like the rest of them, yeah, we're not surprised by any of this.
Any of it.
Tre'Davious White, once again, I always think back to the old arguments. Last year at this time, the guy didn't give up any touchdowns, which makes for a great tweet, and it's exciting, and he never gave up any touchdowns. Here's where the PFF grade tells the story here. 74.7 coverage grade for Tre'Davious White in 2019. 71.9 last year. Very similar coverage grades in both seasons. This past year, he gave up a passer rating of 96. In 2019, it was a 51. The problem, he gave up 5 touchdowns this year instead of 0 in 2019. Did he actually get that much worse? Not really. It's just, you know, where did you give up the receptions? They happen to be in the end zone in 2020. It's not easy to cover in the red zone anyway. So I wouldn't judge also, a corner just by touchdowns.
And there's also plays that, like, they miss rather than you made. Like there's a play on his tape in the year he didn't give up a touchdown that should have been a touchdown, but the receiver, like the quarterback, missed the receiver.
Right. I referenced the one with Jalen Ramsey earlier. So you're in the PFF system. You will get downgraded if you get beat, even if it's not a completion. If it's a missed throw or a drop pass or whatever it is. So the grade always tells a better story than the stats. But the stats are used to maybe back up our points. Yeah. And here's where our stats back it up. For Tre'Davious White, 11 missed tackles in each of the last two seasons as well. Those matter. Those show up. It might not always be when you're in single coverage.
Yeah, there are different gradations of missed tackles. Some of them are not big deals. Some of them are not necessarily particularly bad plays. Some of them are catastrophic plays that are as bad as like getting whooped at the line of scrimmage and giving up a 70-yard touchdown. Like if you completely whiff on a tackle on the edge against a running back, you are the reason that running back is going 50 yards and scoring a touchdown.
So again, all these players that we're talking about, we think are very, very good. They're very good players. They just didn't make the PFF 50 this year. Aaron Jones, running back from the Green Bay Packers as well. And I think Chase Young, if we're talking about guys that could have been on the list this year and will be next year for sure, Chase Young, Washington Football Team edge defender.
Yep.
Any other just missed that you wanted to highlight?
Just because we feel that strongly about him as a prospect, I think you could make an argument that the only rookie that belongs on there would be Kyle Pitts.
So obviously, even it's the just highest, putting strongest, him on this.
Yeah, yeah, just like putting him straight in there and saying, without even seeing the field, you are a top 50 player in the NFL.
No, I think that's fair.
Like the word unicorn. That's the thing we've been saying about him all the way through this process. If he is that, and if they are capable of using him that way. And so far, like all of the talk out of what they're doing, looking at that offense, says they are, he may well put himself on this list after his rookie season.
So you've transitioned nicely into who's going to be on this list next year. Chase Young, who I already mentioned. Kyle Pitts, who you mentioned. I'm going to continue. This is going to be my theme of the summer. Breakout Quinnen Williams, interior defensive lineman from the Jets. You could argue that he broke out last year. Mm. In fact, that was my opening line, our little NFL.com voiceover. Check it out. He had a good season last year, Quinnen Williams. High 70s, run defense, pass rush grade, both numbers improved. I just think you see that next step. He'll become a 50 pressure guy, I think, on the defensive interior. He's already one of the best in the league at finishing in the run game. So I think Quinnen Williams is one of those guys that I'm going to continue to hype up all summer and has a really nice season this year.
Okay.
Do you have any other guys that you think for this year? You did that top 25 under 25 list as well.
I mean, it depends on the development, but Tristan Wirfs could get himself onto the list next year. He was pretty close after his rookie season, and rookie years for offensive linemen aren't usually their best. Frank Ragnow, I think, could take another slight step forward and be that guy. The cornerback is always chaotic. Derwin James didn't make the list, and if we get a healthy Derwin James, he's one of the best players in the NFL, period. We just haven't seen that for a while.
DK Metcalf, maybe? Talk about those freak receivers.
DK Metcalf, and then Saquon Barkley, who, you know, has been derailed, obviously, with injuries, torn ACL. But the problem with Saquon Barkley is the Giants' offensive line is probably going to be garbage. And that will cap how good Saquon Barkley looks next year.
I like it. I'm just looking at your top 25 under 25 list and see if there's any other. Mekhi Becton, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
He's got to cut down. He had some ugly pressures given up, but man, you know, maybe we underrated just how much he does have some Orlando Pace run blocks on film. He is still going through all of his positively graded blocks recently. He does move people.
He's freaking 400 pounds of Madden Mountain. Of course he moves people.
As a rookie, he really moves people. It is impressive what Mekhi Becton can do. You got to cut to – he was one of the most volatile tackles in the league from a run blocking standpoint. High negatives, high positives. If he can cut down on some of the negatives, Becton can be special.
I saw Jim Nagy tweeting about some Minnesota right tackle who's
over 400.
Got Aaron Gibson-esque proportions, 6'8" and 400 pounds.
He was over 400 as a freshman.
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I'm all for seeing giant freaks of nature playing football.
Yeah, you're a big weight guy.
Well, no, it's got to be like – it's got to be good weight. Remember like Damian Mama, right, was like 400 pounds as a freshman at USC. But he shouldn't have been. Like, there was no yeah. That guy was not a 400-pound human being. He just, for some reason, was weighing in at that. And then eventually, over the course of his career, they slimmed him down to whatever his natural actual weight was. And he was terrible. Like, he just had no business being 400 pounds. But there are people like Mekhi Becton and this dude who kind of belong in the 400-pound range. And if you can get one of those as a good football player, I'm here for it.
So that's it, man. PFF 50, part two. We got our just missed. We got our guys for next year. Let us know. Who do you think? Where did Sam get it all wrong? It's all Sam. Where did Sam get it all wrong? Email us at nflpodcast@pff.com. Email us ideas for what you want, how many hot peppers you want Sam to eat.
No. Not how many. Just if you want it to happen.
I know. Email some ideas on what the next charity drive
should be. There will be one pepper consumed, if there is any.
And email us with any other accessories you think I need to, like, some like Giants wristbands and stuff. There was a great time in baseball history where some of the superstar players had wristbands with their own faces on them. What? Like Barry Bonds had Barry Bonds wristbands. It was awesome. There was like three dudes in the league who did it, but it was like classic late 80s, early 90s.
Very silly.
It was awesome.
Email us at nflpodcast@pff.com and let us know what the next charity drive thing should be. Because this one, we've reached the target. We're up to like, $4,000 now that of money we've raised for charity.
Yeah,
after two of these things.
Let's just keep that going.
My goal, as I said, was $10,000 for the calendar year. So we're freaking streaking ahead. Let us know what the next thing should be, because Steve's had the Fro Show. This will be me dressed up as Minor League Steve. We're in need of the next one. Now, fairness would dictate it's you next, and therefore you should have to eat the hot pepper.
Could be a team effort.
But I will have to do that if that's the way it is. But, you know, email us, let us know alternative suggestions rather than eating Rick's produce.
Shout out to our team that created the College Football Preview magazine. It just released on Monday. 600-plus pages of analysis. Best returning players for all 130 teams. Advanced scheme breakdown, strength of schedule, projected wins. It's incredible. I get the Phil Steele magazine every year.
Still?
Yes. Love the detail behind the Phil Steele magazine for college football. But this is going to become like the next Phil Steele and much more. College Football Preview Magazine, 600 pages of analysis. Check that out at pff.com. Shout out to Ethan Hornsby, going crazy back there. We just made him sit through back-to-back shows. I mean,
he doesn't want to be part of the show.
These are separate.
Don't upset him.
He doesn't want to?
Doesn't want
to. Oh, cut that out. Doesn't want somebody cut that out. Maybe Ethan. I want to give his boss's son. You got to give him a shout out, right? No,
not if he doesn't want
one. I'm just kidding. Ethan's doing a great job. He thought he was coming in for one show. He's here for two.
I mean, I'm sure he hit the stop button minutes ago at this stage.
Don't even cut that out, Ethan. You deserve a shout out. Good work. All right. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll be back on Monday with more NFL action.